Good. Okay, so what I want to talk to you a bit about today is a bit about my other passion. So I was really, really pleased that the theme was steering to the deep, because I'm really into sailing. So that's one of my other great hobbies, great passions. So just want to evoke a bit of what that's like for you. So first thing is that you you never accidentally go sailing. You always decide to go. Yeah. So you always decide to go on that journey to start with. And what you do is when you get on your boat, you leave the shore behind. You leave this safe land with all of its conveniences and comforts, and you head off into the depths, into the oceans. And the ocean is really strange and mysterious. Like, it's so alien to us. Like, you can't just pop down the shop and get some milk when you need it. You know, quickly when you get out to sea, your phone signal dies. You've got no Wi-Fi, you know, so you're really out on your own. And it's such, it can be really beautiful, but at the same time, it can be very, very terrifying. It seemingly sort of almost combined sometimes. And so just this year, I mean, I regularly go sailing, and this autumn I went and I sailed down the coast of the UK, so the eastern coast. So I took a train up to Scotland. I got on this boat and I sailed down. It's about 600 miles, and we were trying to do it in 6 or 7 days. So it's quite a sort of, you know, long, quite a quest, quite an adventure. And we were a bit unlucky with the weather. So most of the journey is going south. And just this week, all the wind happened to be coming from the south. And so if you know anything about sailing, it's incredibly difficult to sail where the wind is coming from. So there we are. We've got this ragged crew of people from all over, and we're trying to get this boat down south, fighting against the waves and the tide and the wind. We have this mission, we have this objective that we're trying to do. And we were doing these quite long passages. So we're doing, firstly, we're splitting to two watches. So, you can't sort of stop and have a nap. You've got to keep sailing the boat. So we're doing 4 hours on, 4 hours off. And we're doing sort of like 40-hour passages, like 2 days at a time, stopping for a bit and then going again. And, it's really provocative, like particularly when you're there at 3 or 4 in the morning, you're helming this yacht and the wind is blowing at you and the water's coming over the side. And, out of the darkness, these big waves loom up and pick your boat up and move them along and then carry on. So it's very, very sort of provocative, very, very sort of visceral somehow. And you start to reflect on the fact that you're on this tiny little island, and this is all you've got protecting you from the depths of the dark ocean. You know, this little boat made of, you know, a very thin skin of fiberglass is the only thing that's protecting you from the water. And you particularly notice this when you're trying to sleep. You know, you're off watch, you go downstairs, you try to sleep, and you're being buffeted around. You can hear the water flying by the side of your bunk, just like inches away. And you really realise how little there is between you and absolute destruction. Come on in. So all this doesn't sound like very much fun, does it? But the reality is once you've got, as the devotion is saying, once you've got a bit of that brine in your blood, you just can't forget it. You know, you just can't forget it. And you have to go and see the sea, go to the sea. So there's a poem that I really like, which I'm just going to read you the first couple of verses of, which really evokes this. So it's by John Masefield, and it's quite an old poem. I must go down to the seas again, to the lonely sea in the sky, and all I ask is a tall ship and a star to steer her by, and the wheels kick and the wind's song and the white sail shaking, and a grey dawn on the grey sea, and the grey dawn breaking. I must go down to the seas again, for the call of the running tide is a wild call and a clear call that may not be denied. And all I ask is a windy day and the white clouds flying, and the flung spray and the blown splume and the seagulls crying. So for me, that call of the sea, that sort of desire to get out on the water that I feel, that's sort of in my blood, has a similar kind of feel to me as the call of the Dharma. You know, like once you've kind of tasted it, you can't forget it, and it niggles at you in the back of your mind. It just reminds you that there's something that you need to do. And, you know, I guess my first taste of this really was on a sub-35 retreat, so not unlike this one. It was a mixed retreat, so there was a few more women around, but mostly it was pretty much the same. And I'd been coming along to the London Buddhist Center for a few months and was going to a drop-in meditation class, but I sort of, it wasn't sort of enough somehow. It wasn't what I was looking for quite. But I thought, before I sort of go and look elsewhere, I thought I'd give it a go and go on retreat. And I was really taken by it, really, really taken by it. So, I mean, I guess maybe, you know, if you've had a bit of a sense of what it's like being on retreat, you know, you suddenly get a sort of idea of the possibility of living a life which has sort of more value. You know, a life that has meaning, a life that has lots of friendship in it, a life that has connection. And it was, you know, I think for me it was something I was really looking for. I definitely hadn't had much of that in my life to date up until that point. So it got into my blood, you know, it got into my blood at that point, and I wanted to do more. I wanted to pursue it a bit further. And so, yeah, I sort of kept coming along. But about 6 months later, I was sailing again. So I was in Norway this time, and I was sailing a tall ship down the coast of Norway. A completely different type of sailing this time. So it was beautiful weather, you know, crystal clear water, sailing up these fjords in this amazing ship. I had such a good time. And then I got off the boat in Stavanger in Norway. I picked up my email for the first time in like 7 days, and there's an email there waiting for me from a friend who lived in a community at the London Buddhist Centre. And the communities at London Buddhist Centre, the men's communities in particular, are, you know, they're quite sort of solid affairs. They're single-sex communities. They're quite historic. They've been there for sort of 20 or 30 years. And some of the guys living there have been living together for like 25 years or so. So, you know, very sort of big sort of personas, big people in the order of movement. I didn't know any of this at the time, really. But yeah, there's a friend of mine asked me if I was interested in moving in. They had a space available. And I didn't really know what I was doing, but I knew that I was getting more involved, and I was living in a house shack at the time where it was a sort of a bit of a party house. So I'd come home after a weekend retreat and there'd be sort of the detritus of a party left over. So it wasn't sort of quite working for me. So I was up for something different. But I didn't really know quite what I was doing, but I remember distinctly having a really, really strong sense that I just had to get out of the way of it, you know, like this, there was something that was calling me, or something that was trying to take me away into the depths, and I could block it or I could step aside, and I decided to just go with it. I decided to just write back and say, yes, that would be really good, thanks. And for the first few months, I used to lie in bed thinking, how the hell did I get here? Like, how did this ever happen? But I really ended up, I guess, in some ways, with a life full of treasures. There was treasures there that I never really knew that were available. So sort of, you know, treasures of friendship, treasures of unity of purpose, confidence, even insight. All this was available if you only sort of take a leap into the unknown. And for me, the greatest adventure I've been on to date was my ordination course, which so I was ordained this year, as well as along with a few of my brothers in the audience here. I was fortunate enough to go along on a 4-month ordination course in Spain. And this is up in a Spanish mountain valley. So you're out in this pine forest, which is really spectacular. And despite the lack of water, it's not unlike a ship, actually. You sort of get there, and there's 20 of us being ordained that year. So you get there, and there's this crew ready to go on this voyage with you. And you've got a couple of sort of more experienced order members there to guide the ship, like the skipper and the first mate. And you've got quite a routine about it. You know, you get there and you you're meditating a lot, you're eating at quite regular times, you've got study and other things, so you're in quite a routine. And you just practice a lot. You just you spend a lot of time just practicing, just being together and practicing. And for me, this was really significant. I really found that my whole sense of my whole perception of the world and reality opened up to a certain degree. And at times, I think that was really quite scary. You know, it's a bit like being out in the ocean during a storm. You know, you wonder whether you're going to make it. You wonder whether you're going to be tossed into the deep ocean, never to rise again. And you just sort of have to try and weather it at times. Thanks. Is that the 10 minutes? Yeah. So, what happens on your ordination course when you're ordained? You're ordained in two parts. So you do one part privately with a preceptor, a person that's going to ordain you, and then the second part happens publicly with all of your brothers, all of your fellows that are being ordained with you. And just like the sea, just like when you're out in the ocean on your own, you have to face these fears alone. You know, when you walk out to go and meet your preceptor to be ordained privately, you have to make the decision to go. You know, you have to decide that you're willing to cast yourself into the depths. And I think just like the poem that Vidyavachana started the retreat with, there was a great line there, which is being willing to wreck the ship ourselves and all. You know, so it really sort of evokes that. You have to be willing to, it probably won't come to that, but you have to be willing to go there, personally, individually. And then publicly, for me, that was such a joyous day. It was such a lovely day because suddenly you're all there together with everyone else. You know, people that you'd known for a long time. I was there with two very, very good friends of mine, including Sagrasila. And, you're suddenly there with your crew. You're there in it together. This great adventure that you've all embarked on, and you know that you're all going to see each other through, you're all going to look out for each other all the way through. And for me, that was a really, really powerful and joyous moment. So I just wanted to evoke that sense, that call, you know, that call. Like if you've had a taste, if you, if something niggles you at the back of your mind about the Dharma, then I just encourage you to answer that call. Answer that call of the running tide, and leave the shore behind.